Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. We are at June 21st, 2012, about a third of the way through this year, maybe halfway, as tonight is the solstice. The Gregorian calendar, at any rate, the midpoint in our year, which would end on December 21st, 2012, when some people say the world is going to come to an end. And, of course, I don't say that. Although I think 2012 has been earmarked for some major changes. We might call them social political changes. And I've always said that these could be coupled and timed along with major other changes that could be physical in nature, but as yet there's no indication that there's major planetary objects coming into the solar system, although now is that time when one might be able to see if you had some good telescopic equipment down very south in the on the planet. But at any rate, June 21st, 2012, and yesterday, actually, the solstice occurred yesterday, June 20th, just before midnight universal time. That would have been about 7 p.m. Eastern time last night, was the crossing of over the longest day of the year, and then now the days will start to become shorter. Remember that the Celts, those residents of northern Ireland, what is now Ireland, the ancient Celts, used to mark June 21st as the center day of summer. The center day and summer actually began a month and a half, according to their calendar, we would already be a month and a half into summer and midway between summer, and that always made sense to me. Why would the longest day of the year start summer? That seems counter-logical to me. But at any rate, the other thing that happened was on the 19th we had a new moon. And I thought that was an interesting combination of factors, celestial clocks lining up, so to speak. But once again, not that would cause the end of the world or any other thing, it's just an interesting set of circumstances that came near alignment about a day apart. But I'll be talking a little bit about weather here, and just to let you know, this morning the announcement came out of Duluth, Minnesota, a city that's on the southwest corner of Lake Superior. The city of Duluth received torrential, and I mean torrential, rains. The city is pretty much shut down. A lot of the infrastructure has been destroyed. I could hardly believe the pictures myself. For those of you who are not familiar with this minor city in northern Minnesota, by the way, it gives Minnesota one of its two international seaports, the other one being St. Paul, Minneapolis, where the Mississippi River comes into Minneapolis and St. Paul. That's the other access that Minnesota has to the ocean. So, oddly enough, Minnesota is the most centralized state or piece of land in the North American continent, and it has two international seaports, separate seaports, one that goes to the Atlantic, one that goes to the Gulf of Mexico. But at any rate, Duluth is the harbor city at the southwest corner of Lake Superior, and it is hilly. You could compare it to San Francisco. The hills are very steep, and so once the rain and the water started to build up and come down the hills, I was amazed at the pictures I've seen, just the few pictures that have come out of there. Roads missing, holes in the ground with cars sitting 20, 25 feet down into big holes where the roads are simply missing. And, of course, the infrastructure ripped out. A lot of people evacuated. And it's just been declared an emergency zone. There's a very big rural component to Duluth, as it borders a large rural area where people live. So there's no real reports coming in from there because they're simply cut off. So hope everybody up there has been prepared. The other thing I want to specify is that in all of this, most people there are without water. And one would think, well, gee, they live on the biggest freshwater lake in the world, but it's all polluted. And that's what happens when it rains. 2 days ago, you would not have been able to convince people in Duluth that they would have to prepare. And I know there's some people in Duluth that were prepared because they bought water filters from me and were prepared to have their own source of fresh water. But, of course, the vast majority of people think that they're going to pick up the phone and dial 911 and the government truck is just going to pull right up in front of their house with supplies and water and bottled water, everything that you need. And that's not the case. When these cities shut down, the food, the water, the necessary supplies, of course, electricity is out in many of the areas and will be out for a very long time to come. And the people are simply displaced. I saw this storm moving through the weather map, and in fact, I almost was there because I had a plan in mind. I was going to go up as far north as I could to see the extended day. And this is something that as you drive farther north, the curvature of the earth is such that every 100 or 200 miles that you drive north, you're getting much closer to the Arctic Circle. And literally, your day is about 18, 19 hours long, and the night is about 4 hours, and it hardly gets dark. It's a time of year, that's how close you are in relative to the Arctic Circle. Of course, the Arctic Circle defines the point at which you have one day of 24-hour sunlight, and then north of that, you would have many days of 24-hour sunlight, what they call the midnight sun. But at any rate, I was almost on my way to go through Duluth and up and experience June 20th and 21st, the solstice, far, far north, and some other things came up. I was not able to go, but I would have been right in the middle of that storm. I saw the storm coming, and it was heading northeasterly, but a tremendous amount of rain. And here's the other point about that storm system. As it moved northeast and built, all of that water came from outer space. It's very clear. That's one of those nighttime storms, as you saw it developing on the radar, on the weather map. The water was not in that system 24 hours earlier. Where did the water come from? It came from outer space. It's the only place that that amount of water can come from. And so that's something I predicted a long time ago in my weather work. How does this happen? Well, the electrical connections into outer space from the upper ionosphere of Earth, these are like comet tails that attach in. Those electrically attach all the way down into the low cells that are what we call our storm systems, the low cells, and that water just comes pouring down into there. And you could see the weather map at night building and building the amount of moisture in the air. There's only one place that could have come from, because southwest of Duluth and southwest of the United States, it's dry. It was dry. The entire United States was dry. So where did this massive amount of flood water come from? Outer space. It amazes me that people are still, especially scientists, geologists, are still trying to wrestle with this idea, saying that no, flooding is like the great flood of Noah. Oh, it was a dam broke over by the Mediterranean Ocean and it flowed into the Mediterranean, and that was the great flood. No, we had 40 days and 40 nights, and really, if you look closely at the old texts, it was more like 44 days and 44 nights, but of torrential rain, the kind that Duluth experienced. But Duluth had it for one night. Imagine Duluth with 44 days and nights. It rained constantly. The oceans rose hundreds of feet. This water accumulated and the earth was drastically changed. My newest CD, talking about the title of the CD set, two CD set, is The Physics of Planet X and Ancient Celestial Disasters. In there I talk about the Noah event. But the people of Duluth experienced this for one night, and look at the damage. If you had 40 days and 40 nights of rain, in that type of torrential rain, literally everything would be washed away. You would not have a speck of buildings, whatever. And so that's why a lot of people look into history and they go, and in the geological record, and they say, we don't see history. We don't see all the buildings that would have been here if we had a massive population on Earth 10 or 20,000 years ago. Well, the Noah's flood pretty much took care of that. Other events, the Moses event, the Venus event, took care of a lot of that also, where the Quetzalcoatl, according to the Maya and Inca, great tidal waves washed over the land, swept away entire populations and their everything that goes along with them. So at any rate, just going back to the concept of being prepared, there one time we did a calculation based on the number, and this is from all the different companies that are selling water filters out there since the 1990s. Remember that Y2K in the world was going to end, and of course it didn't, but due to a computer glitch, which never happened, which I told people, I said, that isn't going to cause the end of the world or computer worlds, but everybody got on the bandwagon, had to jump up and down and scream and make a speech. But at any rate, that's about the time when gravity water filters started selling. So myself and some of my cohorts sat down one day and we made an estimate of the number of gravity feed water filters that have been sold since that time. And the number is strikingly small, which means that the vast, vast majority of people out there are simply unprepared. Like I said, go to Duluth and ask anybody on the street if you can find them. Most of the people have been exported out of there. But if you could go to Duluth a few days before this happened and say, I think you better start preparing, and you had a sign walking up and down the street, the people would have thought you were some kind of cult nut idiot that was trying to, preach the end of the world or something. If you walked up the street now in Duluth, people would say, how come we didn't know about this? Why didn't we prepare? So anyway, that has a lot to do with my main science topic tonight. I'm going to continue talking about the Moses event, but it's more of a social aspect of the Moses event, a little bit about the physical part of the history. But how on earth did all of those people, the Israelites, become embondaged, enslaved in Egypt? How did that happen? Well, it's very interesting because it's happening today in the United States and the entire world. And I'm going to go through the whole laundry list of steps that took place back then and which were eventually outlawed in the old documents, in the old texts. And that's what the Colbran and other ancient texts talk about. That's why those documents are feared by the people in power, because they tell you how to live. They tell you how not to live. They talk about interest, the legal way that interest should be charged, and who should be the benefactors, the people loaning the money. And everything we have today is exactly what was stated in the old text, that this should not, cannot ever be again, and it's upon us again, and the entire United States and the entire world is falling rapidly into slavery. And once that happens, then that it slides in those government jobs. A government job is not a job, it's slavery. Okay, so I will talk about that and all those steps leading up to those events. But along with that are physical events. that finally the comet came through the solar system and the Venus protoplanet comet moving through the solar system for literally hundreds of years, and when it had a major encounter with Earth, that's when what we call the Moses event, when they finally left Egypt. But all of those events leading up to the Moses event, the slavery, all of those were social events, exactly like what is happening today. So, but first I want to talk a little bit about this day's weather around the world. Major storm systems around the world right now. Antarctica is being just blasted right now with a major storm. Southeastern Brazil, also into the South Atlantic, has a very steady stream of storms building at that point. Africa, along the equator of Africa, moving westerly along that equatorial belt, where the storms build, they drop off that lower point at about 5 degrees north latitude off of western Africa and drop down into the mid-Atlantic, where typically they become hurricanes starting this time of year, but none of them are becoming hurricanes at this point. They're dropping, and typically those storms move westerly and then start swinging north. For the past number of years, those storms have been swinging south into northern Latin America, into northern South America, and that's what's happening now. So you're getting a lot of rain in Venezuela, Panama, Colombia, Ecuador, into those countries, these storm systems moving off. There's a tropical storm right now, but typically, or characteristically, there is very low solar activity right now. We don't have any major celestial alignments going on right now, electrical alignments, and so nothing is driving these storm systems into major other than, let me continue with the list here, except for the areas of India, China, and Southeast Asia. The whole area and from the South China Sea up to about southern Japan just being pounded with heavy, heavy storm systems, large-scale storm systems. And then the one major storm that hit and pounded Duluth, Minnesota was kind of a storm all to itself. But at any rate, someone wrote in this past week, and I know I gave my hurricane prediction earlier in the year, and it was rather brief, but they wanted me to do this again, or I guess they thought I never did it. So I will repeat it again with a little more detail. But basically, there is no major electrical alignment activity in the year 2012 that would cause major hurricane or severe storm, typhoon type storm systems. And of course, this can always change if we have major solar flaring, or if we have comets coming into the solar system that are unpredicted, or if we had other solar conditions that would affect Earth, coupled with, say, a new moon. Every month we have a new moon. But I'll just go through the months. We are now in the month of June. June 6th, we had the inferior conjunction of Venus, but it did not turn out to be a major event. It's at the very beginning of the hurricane season, and in terms of weather, was not a major worldwide event with an electrical alignment. The month of July, we have an extremely minor event with Mercury and Earth in an electrical alignment on July 28th. And given that nothing else might happen, in fact, there's no other activity going on in the solar system at that time from what we can see right now, from what I can chart out in the as far as the electrical conditions of the solar system, and given that the sun is relatively benign at this time, there's no reason to expect any major events then. August, September, October, November, nothing. Nothing, 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 nothing. 4 months in a row. Then December 3rd, we have an electrical alignment with Jupiter, and that can always be interesting. But at that point, we're far out. We've crossed over out of what you'd call the hurricane season. The hurricane season occurs, it's central around the month of August. Why is that? That is because in the electrical model of the solar system, there is an excess current of protons in the solar wind. That excess current cannot continue forever. So the cycle of electrical current, there has to be a return current sheet coming back to the sun. Earth passes through that current sheet in the month of August. And so centered around the month of August, we have what? The peak of the aurora season. We have the peak of the tornado season, and we have the peak of the hurricane season. And that can vary because this plasma sheet that returns to the sun is like a big snake that swings back and forth in outer space. And sometimes we move into it, and it'll move away, and then we'll move back into it. And so you can see this in the solar wind, where the solar wind velocity will almost stop. And the dynamic pressure of the solar wind will almost stop in the month of August or thereabouts. But as we move into December 3rd with an electrical alignment with Jupiter, Jupiter can be a major contributor to electrical connections because it's close enough, it's big enough. If we connect electrically to Jupiter, then we can have severe reactions. But there's no reason to believe at this time that that's going to happen this year. There are no other contributing factors, is what I'm saying. Everything is pretty much spread out around the solar system. And so, at any rate, 2012 does not look like a major year for hurricanes, for severe weather, unless something comes in, something unexpected, a comet that comes in and starts affecting the sun. For example, Hale-Bopp pumped up the solar energy for a period of about 6 years, and we saw major storms. We saw a double solar peak, something that had never happened before. Why did Hale-Bopp hang in the solar system visible to the naked eye for a period of 6 years? Because it's slowly working its way into the solar system. It has a relatively short period. It has right now a 2,500-year orbit. It came in with about a 4,200-year orbital period. And so it lost all of that, and it's working its way slowly as it works through the solar system. It's gaining mass. That gain in mass causes a drag on the nucleus and causes it to spiral inwards, and that's what Hale-Bopp is doing. So that's why Hale-Bopp had an appearance for 6 years in the solar system. It has an orbit. It's someday it will be possibly a planet, but remember that Hale-Bopp's orbit is perpendicular to the plane of all of the orbits of all of the rest of the planets. The ecliptic, the Earth orbit defines what we call the ecliptic, and Hale-Bopp has an orbit which is just about perpendicular to that. So it's really not, in 2,500 years, it could potentially have a gravitational interaction with Earth, if Earth is in that position, but we don't know because the orbits change. The orbits of these major comets change. Okay, so enough of that. Let me see. So that was my annual hurricane prediction. So in one word, I would say my 2012 hurricane prediction is nothing. And of course, that can be modified if conditions change, specific conditions change. I have something I want to throw out. And if you have any answers to this question, please respond to the email address that's on my webpage. I believe it's jmcc@jmcanniescience.com. I've got a friend who's in need of some medical attention and is not interested in getting standard chemotherapy, chemo radiation, for a bladder cancer situation, a tumor in the bladder. So at this point, what, just throwing out the question, is there anybody that knows of medical professionals in, say, Canada, where someone can go and get a bladder operated on in Canada? Any references? Also, are there any, say, in Canada, this particular person asks for any groups or medical clinics, whatever, that might be working with Cannabis Activa. And so those, as I say, I'm just passing that along. Any of those references would be passed on and verified first, so that we know that they're legitimate. But at any rate, just trying to find out if there's any alternative medical procedures, say, in Canada, because the United States, forget about it. It's locked down. The only thing the doctors here can think or talk about is chemo. It's a big money-making operation, and they're not about to change it. None of them are going to upset that apple cart. So it's really a pathetic situation where people are in need of medical attention. They don't accept the procedures that are going on in the United States, and I wouldn't myself either accept what they're doing. Poison and radiate people to nearly to death and call that a cure. And then the statistics are totally turned against. They're totally fixed. When have you ever heard of somebody being classified or documented as dying from chemo? Where that over the past 50, 60 years has killed many, many people before they would have ever died from the cancer. So, but if they ever die, they're classified as dying of cancer, not of the treatment. So at any rate, there's a lot of people, a growing list of people who do not want to submit their bodies to that treatment, and I agree with it. So once again, if you know of any, say, Canadian or Mexican, I don't know, we're just fishing around here for information, that would treat with, say, a bladder operation or surgery or the Cannabis Activa clinics that are using that as treatment, then I suspect it would have to be out of the U.S. Anyway, as I said, if you have any information like that, send it to my webpage email address, jmcc@jmcanniescience.com, and we'll filter through those and see if there's any legitimate responses. Okay, on to the Moses story. Let me make sure I've gone through all of my notes here. Oh, there is one other story. Just came in. Iran, Syria, Russia, China have a ongoing operation. Syria allowed the Chinese ships, I think a dozen Chinese warships, to pass through the canal and go into the Mediterranean along with Iran. So they're having this operation. It's an air, sea, land military operation, including an estimated 90,000 soldiers from those four countries. Gee, I wonder if they're getting ready for something. So you have Russia, China, Iran, and Syria doing a joint military air, naval, land operation, and including radar, anti-aircraft, all of the things necessary to deal with the United States. And you got little Obama in the White House. He has talked tough. Excuse me, has talked very tough about the Iranian situation, but has failed to do anything, because I believe the military advisors are telling them that no, you're not going to attack Iran. This is not going to be the clean sweep like they did in Iraq. This country is armed to the teeth. They're not going to back down. They have allies, Russia, China, and Syria. And it looks like Egypt also would join in. A lot of other countries would join in this this little powwow over there. So at any rate, just wanted to mention that. Let me look at my other notes here. Okay. So on to the Moses story. Oh, I'm sorry. There is one other story here. The Chinese space program. And I don't know how to say these Chinese names, so I won't even attempt. But the Chinese spacecraft with three astronauts, or Chinese nauts, whatever you call them, on board, just docked with the Chinese space station. Now, I've always said that the Chinese are going to overtake space. They have a national cause. It's the way Chinese work. And in a recent interview, some people asked me about if we were our own worst enemy in going into outer space. And I said, you know, the United States is nowhere in terms of space, outer space. You can have your X programs. You can have all your other stuff. But the only game in town in the free world are the private agencies that are working, the Burt Rutans, the Richard Bransons, the laundry list of other people that are working on private space programs. And I'm not talking about the ones aligned with NASA, the ones that, say, just docked with SpaceX just aligning with NASA. Those are not going to take us anywhere. That's old technology, and it's the old hat, old NASA glory days type of technology. It's not going to take us anywhere. So at any rate, but the real game in town is China, as they are moving in with an alliance with Russia. The United States is cutting its throat in all aspects of the world. They were just basically thrown out of Latin America at the Colombian Cartagena meeting of Latin America. Basically, the United States and Canada were thrown out. They were ignored, and little Obama sat there, and his Secret Service guys. By the way, I don't know if a lot of you heard about the Secret Service. We've all heard about the Secret Service and their bout with some of the ladies down there. But what did not come out is the women that were involved in this were actually, a lot of them were intelligence agents. And they stole cell phones, documents, all kinds of things from the Secret Service agents while the other girls were keeping them busy. So there you go. That's our swell Secret Service protecting you and me. Okay, on to the Moses story. How does the situation today, the financial situation today, resemble what happened back in the Moses days? How did those people become enslaved? And remember that when Pharaoh, when Moses was trying to free the people to get them to leave, there was a lot of physical activity, the plagues, the seven plagues. And As I said, on my CD, my 18 hours of lectures on the latest CD set, I talk about the seven plagues and how the approaching comet caused those various plagues, from the various conditions that came in from the passing comet. But the Pharaoh, in spite of this, would not let those people go. Those were his slaves. Those were his possession. And in the United States today, let's talk about some of the activities, the legal activities that are going on, basically that will enslave this country. The new food law, 510, gives the World Trade Organization, which Monsanto sits very high on the board of these, saying that growing food is illegal. And now listen to this twist. Bringing food into the country, unless it is done under the guise of the World Trade Organization, is basically illegal. You cannot import food, and this is under the new law in the United States, the Food Safety Act. Remember, there were some false flag events where food came in, and it had salmonella, and people got sick and died. Well, it came from a single field in California, supposedly. Well, gee, that is just too ridiculous a scenario to buy. How come one particular field had salmonella and none of the rest did? Well, the whole idea is that they needed control. That's the standard control mechanism for gaining control. you create a false flag event. Oh, we need protection. Pass a law. Congress has to, you know, rubber stamp it, put it through, 100% vote. And so now we have a Food Safety Act. It's protecting you and your children, remember. Milk becoming illegal in some states because it's dangerous to your health. But here's the new twist. If a seed is planted by an individual and that plant grows, they're now claiming that growing a plant is an illegal invasion of this country because it was not sanctioned under the World Trade Organization. In other words, you can't plant a seed in your garden and grow it because that is illegally bringing plants into the country. So at any rate, the control of food, the control of water, and that's something the entire effort, the green effort or the climate change effort. Remember, it was climate global warming, and then it was climate change. You had Al Gore going all over the world. Musicians were singing, and everybody was drumming to the idea that we have to save the world and stop global warming. They say that we're warming up the environment with pollution from automobiles. But they didn't stop Detroit from making gas-guzzling automobiles. They're making bigger ones than ever. The big SUVs that they're pouring out now are bigger and bigger gas hogs and bigger pollutants than ever before. So what changed? A tax. A tax on you, the individual. And the whole purpose of that is to gain control of water. To gain, and this is once again, remember, it's for your protection, everybody. It's for your protection. But at any rate, there is another set of laws coming into effect. For example, right now the Fed, which is the representative of the European bankers in the United States, is loosening up the rules so that the banks, by the way, who were all bailed out, can sell off their foreclosed properties for pennies on the dollars only to big investors. The investors are being handpicked, and they will be allowed to buy in bulk the foreclosed houses. You can't. The guy next door can't. You can't get together with 100 or 1,000 of your friends and buy the houses. They have to go to designated big approved purchasers. And so at any rate, they can buy a $300,000 house for $3,000 to $4,000 and then rent it back to the owners for market price. They would get their money back within the first 1 to 2 months, and then it would be clear profit from then on. But the other half is that the public is losing their private property. It's the biggest transition of wealth, even bigger than the bailouts of the banks. It's the biggest transition of wealth ever in the history of the world. And so there's another new law that's coming in. It's being tacked on to the back of a Federal Road Administration bill for road repair. It says that if an individual owes more than $50,000 in debt to the IRS, then the IRS can send a flag to the Department of Homeland Security, who can take away your right to travel. Sounds like indebtedness enslavement to me. But a lot of people will say, well, gee, that doesn't affect me. How could I ever owe $50,000 in debt and back taxes? Well, let me explain exactly how this can happen. For example, if you own a house, or you're paying on a house, this year if you foreclose on your house after 2012, then you will be sent a 1099 form for the amount of money deficient in the loan, as if you made that money as income all in 1 year. So if you have a $300,000 house and you owe, say you have $50,000 in equity in that house, you have $250,000 unpaid debt when you default on your loan, that will be written in as $250,000 of income, and you will be required to pay taxes on that. Gee, and that's more than $50,000. That's for the average guy on the street. Or how about this? Healthcare, national healthcare. They say they're going to give you insurance, but they don't say anything about the deductible or the contribution of the individual. So somebody in your family gets sick. You go to the public health care facility, which is the only game in town now, remember, and oh, very quickly, boom, you have a big medical bill. You can't pay that medical bill. Oh, well, we'll just put it on your taxes. So now the individual can very quickly overnight become indebted to much more than the $50,000 limit, and this country has become a country of serfs living in rented housing and never able to pay off this debt, the indebtedness of a nation. Now let's go back to old Moses back in the days of Egypt and Pharaoh. How did those people become enslaved? Well, we know for a fact that the exact same set of circumstances existed. Somebody came in from outside, set up a false monetary system. They bought into it with credit, reduced their economy. Okay, what are the steps? One step at a time. Reduce the economy and personal rights. Forced labor, government jobs. When you can't pay your debt, then the government's going to give you a nice job. And so all of your money is going to go to pay off that debt. And, of course, they'll allow you enough to live on, but just barely. And so you are going to be indebted. And, of course, the interest will keep building, so you'll never be able to pay this off. Another requirement is to have goon forces, I call them, at the that control the public. You have to condition the public to become acceptant of this condition. Right now, TSA and airports, everybody has to see a cop on the street corner. The list of conditions, public cameras. In the old days, they just had people around looking at activity. Now they have cameras. They can centralize it. They can read your face. Remember that Google, Facebook, all of those Twitter, all of those social networking entities now, or search engines, are incorporated into government. All of these are centralized. When you buy a telephone right now, if you go and buy a cell phone, doesn't matter which company you buy it from, they tell you go right home and set up your phone with your Google account. You know what that Google account does? It records every telephone call that you have, who you called, and the telephone numbers. And if you take pictures with your phone, they're all uploaded to Google to your account. Isn't that? And if you ever lose your phone, gee, you can get it all back just by going into your account. But gee, guess who else has access to all of that? All of the cell phone conversations, calls, photographs, videos taken from a phone, instant messaging, anything else you do from that telephone goes up to a common account into your data bank and is accessible by the government. Isn't that nice? So thanks to our good friends at Google, and those guys got real rich. The guy at Facebook, well, I had to laugh, just in a side note, when the guy from Facebook went public and it flopped. I just love it when those things happen, because those, I hope you can revel in that with me a little bit, that the person trying to quadruple his vast wealth overnight didn't happen, and now they're in serious litigation in just about every state because the big IPO didn't go through. Anyway, life in the big city, I guess. But anyway, socialist programs created by the state. In other words, we already had in place Fannie Mae Fannie Mae and Fannie Mae for housing programs, HUD, the Housing Urban Development Program, all of these in place so that the vast majority of people are now under government programs. These are not privatized. You don't own your home. You don't own the loan. You don't have any ability to ever pay it off. Then the collapse of private enterprise, and that can happen overnight because most businesses run on a very small margin, about 5%. You take away that 5%, and that's easy to do. Let's increase gas prices. Let's increase shipping costs. Let's increase taxation. Let's require more social programs that the business has to pay for, and collapse. Private enterprises collapse. And the only people in town are the big, big players who can soak up all of that business. So you have Target, Walmart, etc., that take up all of the small businesses that used to line the streets of Middle America. All aspects of life, water, food, health under government control, all of this, you start to see what's happening. All of your existence is controlled by the government. When good old Hillary was running for office, her main thing was to get everybody under common health care. It wasn't to help the poor people, it was to put a tremendous burden due to them on the working middle class, who right now is strapped to pay for their health insurance. And the end result? Nobody's going to have good health insurance, only the very rich and the senators. So all aspects of life, water, food, health, healthcare, housing, the main things you need in your life, all controlled by the government. Open the borders from other countries to allow the people to come in and basically create a huge amount of dead weight on the another financial burden. Border control, prevent the people from leaving. Make it illegal for those people who are indebted to leave. That, my friends, is slavery. That's where the situation where Moses, those people had been enslaved for hundreds of years. Hundreds of years, and they were waiting for someone to bail them out. When Moses came along, they felt that Moses was their savior, and of course there was a whole laundry list of physical events that happened at the same time. But right now there's a lot of people who say, please bring Planet X in, get rid of this, let's level it and we'll take our chances with Planet X. Let's level this planet, because it would level the playing field. The New York bankers would not be any better than the peon farmer out in the middle of Bolivia. They'd all be on the same plane at that point. Large government projects, the 1930s Jobs Corps, a good example of a system that was set up to employ the country's youth, get them prepared for World War II. The monetary system, false fiat money, never-ending indebtedness, not to mention the national debt. So fascism, militarism, nationalism, centralized control, under one psycho leader, and you have yourself the same situation as Moses. The whole series of events leading up to Moses. So it looks like the members of the current citizens of the United States will very soon, if not many of them already are in this situation, enslaved caste, I would call them, the enslaved caste of the United States. And of course this spreads worldwide as the arm of the United States economy branches around the world to 146 countries. But remember that a lot of countries have split. They've left Iceland, Cuba, Bolivia, Venezuela. Are they bad people? Well, they're called the Axis of Evil for one reason, because they oppose the European banking system. And the entire issue here is that a lot of people in the United States have never been really, say, even to Mexico. I talk to people and they say, oh yeah, I've traveled to Mexico. Where have you been? Cancun and Acapulco. Where'd you stay? Oh, in a condominium. Those people don't know Mexico. They don't have any clue what's going on in Mexico 5 miles away from the condominium. They don't have any clue about the life in Mexico or any of the other Latin American countries. They don't realize that Latin American countries are all different. Like Canada and the United States are different. The Latin American countries are different. The food is different. The cultures are different. The people are different. But everybody here judges Latin America under one umbrella. And they don't understand these people. They don't understand what they have gone through in their political systems, in their history, to get to where they are today. Typically, poverty, a lot of poverty in those countries, and a lot of political corruption. Political corruption rules in the majority of Latin American countries. So, but the point is that a lot of those countries, there are people there who know how to live. And in a lot of those countries, as the U.S. moves in, tries to dominate, they try to destroy the ability of the common person there to exist, to raise their own food. This is happening as European forces move in to these small countries, take over, make trade agreements, forcing those people to be slaves on the level of China, the rate of income of Chinese workers. So at any rate, it's a planetary, it's not just the United States is what I'm saying, it's a worldwide enslavement. And this could go on for hundreds of years. A lot of people say people have a good job. They don't see this. This is one of the criticisms that not just myself criticizing the United States, but this is a typical criticism of many countries, especially the people who are doing quite well. They cannot see through the eyes of other people. They have no clue what's going on in anybody else's mind. They see everything through their own eyes and how it affects them. And they cannot objectively visualize events. They cannot see events in an objective way. They can only see it as how it affects them. That's why, for example, when you bring in 20 or 40 million people from a foreign country and allow them to vote, they don't have the same perception of the country. What are they voting for? Well, gee, what can you give me? What's in it for me? So the politician who makes the most false promises will be the one that wins. But they don't. These people don't understand the corruption, the level of corruption in the political system. They put a black president up to run, and all the black people ran out and voted, thinking that they were going to have a black president, only to find out that he has nothing to do. He doesn't represent them any more than the man on the moon. They're finding that out now. Obama wouldn't be very welcome down in the hood. So let's take, for example, there are in a national political election where you have, say, a Mexican running for president that was born here. Okay, they would all run out and vote thinking, oh boy, we're going to have a Mexican president. And guess what? That guy would have already been handpicked so that he would be part of the banking cartel. His plate has already been very well buttered, let's put it that way. His bread is already thick and juicy and buttered with big steaks, and his allegiance is not to his own people. That would be the person that they would put up there to be elected just to get another 4 or 8 years out of this false image that there are elections in this country. So at any rate, how do you get back to the Moses event? That's how you do it. And they can play this country like an old fiddle, and it'll fold like an old suit, like taking candy from a baby. And most of the people in this country are totally unaware. I'm starting to see people now who make $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 a year starting to feel the financial crunch, and I see them. They can't travel anymore. They can't do things that they used to do. And they don't know why. How could it be that they make that much money, live in a nice house, and are eating peanut butter sandwiches? How could that possibly be? At any rate, I just want to talk one last minute. This situation in Duluth has to wake up some people out there, that one day you're walking down the street, the next day you are in a collapsed infrastructure, as with the city of Duluth. And the people there are in desperate need of water, of supplies, and very few of them, I guarantee you, very few of them have been prepared. But the very first thing you need is clean water. And that's why I don't sell a lot of things. I don't sell flashlights on my website. I don't sell all kinds. I don't sell tents. I don't sell all kinds of other things. The only thing I have on my webpage are the things that you absolutely need. And so the water filter system, the modular water filter system, is something that is only available on my webpage. The pre-filter is only available on my webpage to pre-filter water. And there again, say you were in Duluth right now, and you, the only source of water is muddy. Do you want to pour that into your nice clean water filter? No. You want to pre-filter that so that the water that's going into your gravity water filter is relatively clean. And the pre-filter on my webpage, it's the only place you will find it. Pre-filters the water. The powder that's used in there is medical food grade powders, and they're disposable. You fill up the container with various levels depending on the type of pollution you have in the water: oil, radioactive dust, gravel, silt, whatever it is, and it will filter that out before the water goes into your standard water filter. It fits any of the standard water filters on the market today. So at any rate, go to the webpage jmccsci.com and check out the water filtration items and also the books. Look at the new CD, the new 2-CD set, The Physics of Planet X and Ancient Celestial Catastrophes. The other thing is the books, there's a lot of people who are starting to wake up to my work. And so once again, it's interesting to see that, for example, my first book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, is selling as well today as it was in when it first came out over 10 years ago. So that's because these books were written for all time. They weren't written for just a flash in the pan. So I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.